I've put together two or three collections over the journey of poems, a couple of memoirs, including one called A Memoir of a Dog, that, as suggested, features a dog. A dog called called Sparky. His actual name was Satellite Comet Power. We called him Sparky. He was a standard poodle. And in Melbourne at the time, a doggy school was the way to go. So this is a poem about doggy school. It's called A Small Correction. World War II was supposed to have finished a long time ago, but one troop commander must have escaped. She stands in the center of a circle of us, all obedient and attentive, wondering what will happen here today. This is a miserable day, and I've come poorly prepared. The grass is slippery, soggy underfoot, and my canvas runners are thirsty, or so it seems. Meanwhile, she's barked us into some sort of order, reduced the more timid to whimpers, and seems unlikely to be influenced by my wet socks. Owners, this chain I am holding is not and must never be referred to as a choker. It is a correction chain, and it will be your most important aid in the training of your dog. It is not cruel to use a correction chain, and if anyone has a contrary view, they should leave now. Other than dog noises and traffic, all is silence. Obviously, this woman doesn't take prisoners because they only slow the advance. Very well. I want each of you to make a loop as I am doing and put it around the animal's neck, like this. Note now how easily it slides in response to your use of the leash. Sparky's wandering within the confines of the lead to sniff and explore. He's fascinated by the dogdom around him. Others are barking, straining, and jostling their owners. Handlers, commence walking around the circle. You there, the pincher! Do not allow your dog to run amok in that manner. Correct him immediately. No. He did not feel that and will not respond. Everybody, watch me now. I will demonstrate. Well, crikey. She's gone over, grabbed the leash, shouted heel, and given a huge tug on the choker. Yanked the mutt right off its feet until he's slightly behind her, front legs in the air and looking stunned. Now observe, the dog has been brought to heel. He should not walk in front of his master or mistress. And also, you will note that when I hold him like this, for a few moments, he is completely in my control. He cannot continue a disobedience. She dropped the dog's legs and applied a hand to push his backside down, and voila, the pooch is sitting. He's dazed and confused, but sitting right where he's supposed to be. Wow. Okay, Sparky, let's go. By lesson's end, we too can now demonstrate the benefits of obedience and correction. Class released. I'm not sure if they do it quite that way anymore.
No, but I've been to a class where they did that.
Yeah,
with my very first dog. Yep.
How did you go?
Well, it worked.
Okay.
Just as you described.
And then they have husband school like that too, don't they?
That would be good.
Nice. Okay, I'm going to lead into some mental hospital and psychiatry poems now. But whenever I do this, I always go back to early memories of my mother. She worked in the blue of nursing staff, untrained nursing staff, back many years ago, late 50s and early 60s. I'm thinking back to, and she had come to Australia. Always, I think. With a great grief that she had left her own family behind. Always when I think of her in context, it's with a bit of sadness. This last week or so, she's been doing a bit tough out there at the nursing home. So I was thinking of her, and I thought I'd introduce an extra little piece here. This piece is called Otherwise Known As A Long Way From Home. Magdalena was known as Leni by her mother and father when she worked the fields and factories of Belice. A girl slender as a reed. I heard she could run like the wind, but not too fast for Juro. He caught her with a song and a look in his eye. Magdalena was known as Mag or Meg by the people she worked with in the madhouse refractory ward at Beechworth, an aide in the blue of nursing staff. I heard that she sighed at the end of a long day, hoping Juro had the kids fed and ready for bed. Leni, Leni, this place is a long way from home. Very hard journey for the ones that have left their folk behind. In the old asylum days, there were two meal breaks for staff. There was a patient meal break, and around that was staff meal breaks, first meal, second meal in the day. This is called first breakfast. For 90 minutes after coffee, raise them up out of wet and dirty bedding and then take an allocation to supervise and assist in the showers or strip and remake the beds until breakfast time for workers and for patients. Half staff on first meal break, half on second. Then catch a lift down the hill to home, 30 minutes to get the kids up, into the shower, tidy their rooms, and some breakfast before school. The hoot of a car horn tells that it's time to go back to clean the ward again until first lunch. Hard gig. I have a very early memory of, I don't know why, but it used to be the case that there was a taxi run for female staff to take them up the hill, and out of the fog of winter, these blue uniforms emerging towards the light of the post office where the taxi would pick them up to take them up to work and then come back for another lot. It was a hard gig for the ladies back at the time. And their children were not appreciative. This is called the smell of stockings. There is a particular odour that attaches itself to feet when the shoes are removed at the end of a 13-hour day that begins with the tepid sloshing waters of showers and baths for 45 incontinents. The leather of the shoes captures moisture and holds it in a tight-fitting soup that surrounds feet and winter hose as the day goes on with cleaning and washing floors in the clammy warmth of a steam-heated ward. My mother wants only to take her shoes off to rest swollen and painful feet. I want only to leave the room. Nice. And when I was a kid, I used to ride the bike. We all rode our bikes everywhere. And I'd ride the bike up the hill, or push it, big hill, to visit with my father, who worked in the mess room, and my mum, who was on the wards, particularly on the female wards. There was segregation back in those early days, female wards and male wards. This is Sunday lunch with the ladies. Oh, hello, dear. How are you? Don't you look lovely? Well, I'm not sure if I look lovely, but they sound strange. Like little girls boxed up inside old ladies. It's Sunday, and I've jumped on my bike and gasped my way up to where Mum's working in one of the female wards. They always seem to be busy up here, scrubbing something or folding something. But they're all over me when I visit, almost patting me. Mum is really pleased when I ride up, but sort of hurries me away out of the main room, like she's not sure it's a good thing for me to be there. In one of the empty rooms, I perch on a very neat bed, feet swinging, while Mum ducks out for a second, then comes back with a plate of roast chicken, left over from lunch, and pink junket for a special Sunday dessert. Ah, junket. I think you can still acquire junket if you hurry. Maybe it's on eBay in the out-of-date section. Regardless, my memories of Mum's experience on the wards were hard memories, but she must have had some influence on me because I ended up being a student nurse and going on to be a psychiatric nurse myself. Student nursing was quite an experience back in the day. Let me tell you about having to go to pharmacy for tubes. The deputy in charge has sent me on an errand to pharmacy. The morning clinic cannot proceed without a specialised item of medical equipment. Ask the pharmacist, he said, for a pair of fallopian tubes. You obviously know more about this than I do. The pharmacist laughs and says I should ask one of the female students for a loan. And we used to do things like token economies back in the day, reward systems to improve behaviour and capacity to recognise socially appropriate things, the yeses and noes of the world, the token economy. First year students are not allowed much responsibility, but I am in control of cigarettes. A cigarette for a shower, a cigarette to behave, a cigarette for helping with the cleaning, a cigarette for a song. My life is taken over and surrounded by the cigarettes and smoke that make this world go around. While I, poor fool, decided I should stop smoking just 1 week ago. Devil's work, putting temptation in the way of a young person. And we smoked very determinedly. This piece is Where the Air. When it rains out there, we smoke in here, 30 of us. Gradually, the day room fills, smoke descending from the ceiling, until the only air available is gasped by lying full length on the floor.
Oh, no.
But still, we smoke. And more responsibilities as we became more senior. Famous flying choppers. It is after 6 o'clock in the oldies ward. My colleague carries a tray holding 15 silver cups. Each cup contains a set of pearly whites. Uppers, lowers, uppers and lowers. Students collect the teeth after each meal and scrub them at the laundry sink. But the tray, when placed too close to the edge, is unstable. And not for the last time in student history, the choppers fly. And as we go on, there are other kinds of experience, like kick-starting the morning. It was over before it started. I'd never seen this guy before, not to say hello to, not to medicate, not to upset. No interactions. And I wasn't close to him, 3 or 4 feet away, not even looking at him. But he said hello in his own special way. My colleague told me it was nothing, and she was right. She said it's just how he announces himself, and I could see that that was true too. She said he'd never intended to make contact, and I had to agree, he'd missed me after all. But she couldn't quite convince me that the kick he straightened out just above my shoulder an inch or two from my jaw before turning around and walking off was quite the right way to say good morning. Mm. Things have changed in psychiatry. We don't get what we used to get, not a lot anymore. We're standing in the staff courtyard and it's break time. We're doing coffee and a cigarette. When he says to me, I've always worked in psych. I love it. I've never been tempted by anything else. It's changed, though, from the old days. Oh, a hell of a lot, really. He takes a deep drag and lets the blue smoke of a reflective moment rise, has another sip out of the styrofoam cup and says, you know what? About a year ago, we had a real old-fashioned case come in, like we used to get in the old days. No drugs, no family history, no obvious causes, just crazy. Mad as a cut snake, actually. It was a first presentation, and it took a while, but we fixed him up. He got better, and we turned him loose. He hasn't been back. That's what I like best. Good, straightforward madness that you can do something with. But you don't see much of that anymore. It's a bit of a sad indictment, isn't it? Yearn for the days of old-fashioned madness. Because we could do something with it. This one's for absent friends. I had this in mind for John, Julie. He might enjoy it if he gets to listen. Furball and Freddy. Furball, the tabby cat, is a calamity of sorts. Add up his losses and you get just about half a cat. The tail is gone, an ear, and the eye on the left is quite blind. But he's been part of the institution for years, and every so often one of the staff gets him trimmed up and shaved, and a slender peculiarity emerges into an oversized head, a bit like an Egyptian sphinx. It's quite alarming to the uninitiated. Furball's day is in and out of the units and stalking birds, generally smaller than the black and white ibis that reside in the yard. But it's not a bad life when it's all said and done. Freddy was Romanian once, way back when. He migrated his aspirations to the mental asylum of a very small town in Australia, and he's grown old there. Sometimes he cries inconsolably like a baby in torn-up Romanian or nonsense. Maybe he's not even using the words he was born with, but just voicing an anguish to tell how he feels. In the bedroom, his personal touch is a piano accordion. The bellows are ghosts, and the buttons have sagged deep into the frame a long time ago, leaving just the holes as suggestions. But it's there, and it's his, and maybe it brings back a memory of the polka. Except for what's in his head, he's a loner, and I couldn't begin to tell you what might be happening in there. Tonight, on the medication round, I surprised him, already in bed, and I couldn't help but notice that Freddy does not sleep alone. Before rising to face me, he tucked in and settled down Furball, the cat with no ear, with no eye, and lacking a tail. Medicine down, the two snuggled up with a purr in Romanian as I turned the light out, and I'm sure it was meant as a form of good night. One more and we're done. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll finish with a piece called The Public Poet. This has the singular honour of having appeared in an anthology in Ireland a few years ago. Yeah, remembered only by me now. The Public Poet. He's been assigned a billboard that stands as high as the price of fuel displayed at the petrol stop just down the road. On a corner not far from the main drag and at a place where the traffic has to slow, he's posting a new poem. One letter at a time, working above his head with suction and pole. This is writing poetry the laborious way, but he was never one for pen and paper. It takes a long while, an age, so he keeps them short while his muscles burn from the creative ache of chasing an elusive muse. With his goggles steamed so much of the time, at least the helmet ensures that he writes in occupational health and safety. For any misjudgment of a letter or a word could bring the whole verse down on him. Occasionally, a motorist toots from a car, or an educated passerby might comment about a stray apostrophe, sometimes a comma, until he wonders, does anybody really read the work, try to see to the heart of what he's dragged out of himself? Or do they focus only on the shape and argue about the form? It doesn't really matter. He's their poet. This is all that he can do. And that is all that I can do. Thank you very much.